For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, good morning. It's Saturday, the 2nd of January, 2010. Happy New Year to everybody. This is the first Solder Smoke of the new year. And sorry for the delay in putting out this new edition. I've been busy like everybody else has with holiday activity and all kinds of other things going on. But very happy to be back and to start a new year of Solder Smoke. Some Italy travelogue. There's a lot of things been going on here, and it's when I look at the list of the things that I wanted to tell you about, it's a reminder of how long it has been since the last Solder Smoke. I mentioned that we have this kind of country place up in the Sabine Hills, about an hour north of Rome. Beautiful area, and good for us because it's not a really long drive from Rome, so we can get out and back fairly quickly. It gives the kids the opportunity to play out in the country and get away from the mean streets of Trastevere. I'm being facetious; they're not very mean. One of the things that's happened out there is the olive harvest. The place we have is in the middle of a big olive grove. This area of Italy has been a major center for olive production for Rome, going back to ancient times. As a matter of fact, close to where we have our apartment, on the same property, there are the remains of an ancient Roman villa. And even in ancient times, like I said, the main economic activity in the area was producing olives and olive oil for people down the road in the big city of Rome. And that activity continues. And so there's these beautiful olive trees all over in a really beautiful kind of grid formation on the hills around the property. And they do the harvesting in late November, early December. They have to it's kind of a scary period for them because they have to get the harvesting done because if a frost hits, which is pretty rare, but if a frost hits, it takes out the whole crop, which is a major economic disaster. They didn't have anything like that this year, good thing. And the harvest proceeded normally, and we got to watch quite a bit of it. Now, it's really interesting how they do it. I mean, when we were thinking about how they were going to do this, we had visions of people going up there picking individual olives, and I guess that's how it was done in the past, but modern technology has changed all that. And I have up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page a picture of the apparatus that's now used to get the olives off the tree, and it's this, I think, pretty cool looking kind of tractor device. It's got this big fork, I guess the way I could describe it, sticking out the front, and the fork has these kind of rubber kind of grips. So imagine a big pliers open with rubber on the inner surfaces of the grip of the pliers. And what they do is they drive this thing up to the olive tree, and they grab close to the, I guess, where the branches start to branch out. They grab the olive tree with this rubber grip, and then they throw the switch, and for about 5 seconds, man, this thing shakes that tree. It's not really shaking it; it's more vibrating the tree. It goes, and in 5 seconds, all of those olives are off the tree. And they have, before they do this, they've spread out a tarp on the ground, and so all the olives fall into the tarp. And then they have this other device, this other machine pulled by a tractor, that reels in the tarp, and in about a minute or two, all the olives are removed from the tree. So we thought that was pretty cool watching the olive harvest. Now, olive oil is when you live in Italy, olive oil becomes very quickly a major part of your diet here. I will never again put butter on bread. Now what you do is you dunk your bread in the olive oil. It's all supposedly much healthier. And in ancient times, they believed that the olive oil even had kind of a very positive psychological effect. They say that the olive oil calms people down and puts you in kind of a tranquil state of mind. I don't know if that's true, but I hope it is. And as you go around the area where we have the country place, there's a number of different centers where they will process the olive oil, and when they bring in the olives, they'll squish them and process them and filter them and all that. And a couple of times when we needed a bottle of olive oil, we just went in with an empty bottle, at one point an empty Coke bottle, and gave it to the nice folks who were running the machinery, and they just sort of opened the spigot and filled up the bottle with really raw, what they call extra virgine olive oil. It's delicious. So three cheers for olives and olive oil, and it was interesting to see the harvest. And like I said, I have a picture of the machine up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Continuing with travelogue, Christmas came along. We had a wonderful Christmas here. Got all kinds of interesting toys. You'll be hearing more about some of them. Billy got a radio-controlled model airplane that we've already crashed numerous times into the Sabine Hills. We're going to work on that. Maria got herself an iPod player, and we got a telephoto lens for the camera. So Santa Claus was very good to us this year. But we got to do a little bit of, at my wife's insistence, and it's almost always at my wife's insistence, because if it was up to me, I would rarely leave the house. But my wife wisely pushes us out to get out there and see things and do things in Italy. And on Christmas morning, she said, let's go down to the Vatican and see what's happening down there. The Vatican's very close to our house. So down we went, and sure enough, the faithful were gathering there in St. Peter's Square. And at 12 o'clock, the Pope came out on the porch there of St. Peter's, on the big window, and gave his Christmas greeting. It was really very nice, and we enjoyed it very much. And one of the interesting things about it is that, you know, he gives the greeting, and most of it's in Italian, but then he switches and starts doing Christmas greetings in a very long list of languages. The major world languages, of course, but then even getting into really much smaller languages for individual countries, very often very, very small countries. So and it's fun because the crowd, you realize the crowd is completely global, and there are people literally from everywhere there. So when the Pope said when the Pope announced, for example, that he was going to give his greeting in the language of Burma, there was a small group that cheered for Burmese. And it was really nice event. Now Billy, of course, has a different take on this. At 12 years old, the world looks a little bit different. The world looks different to 12-year-old boys. And as the Pope was going through the list, he even did Esperanto, and we went and talked to some of the Esperanto activists who were there. They were holding a big sign up urging the Pope to give the greeting in Esperanto, which he did. And then so Billy was waiting, and then when the whole thing was over, Billy looked at me and said, "What? No Klingon?" Well, maybe next year, Bill. So far, no Klingon from Pope Benedict. And I wouldn't hold my breath for that one. But it was a really nice event. And you know, we did something similar yesterday, and we happened to be in the area around St. Peter's because there was a bit of a parade down there. And on our way back to the car, we walked in, and there he was again. So we hadn't seen the Pope. We had never seen the Pope in the whole time that we were here. But twice in a week, we saw him. And this time he was giving the New Year's greetings, this time from the papal apartments, which are a bit further up from St. Peter's Square. But fun events, and a good Christmas and New Year here. Oh, yeah, and New Year's Eve. Let me tell you about New Year's Eve. And New Year's Eve, of course, is a really big deal everywhere, a big deal in Rome. And things are done a little bit differently here. You know, everybody, people, newcomers at work were asking, where do we go to see the fireworks? And those of us who've been here for a while kind of looked at them and said, well, everywhere and anywhere. There may have been a couple of organized fireworks displays on New Year's Eve, but they'd be hard to spot because rising up from every corner of Rome was a real barrage of pyrotechnics, as starting about 5 minutes before midnight. And it was a difficult New Year's Eve here because starting around 10 o'clock, it really started pouring down rain. The kids wanted to shoot off their own firecrackers, so we had them out in the piazza here near our house, and it just started pouring rain. But of course, you know, kids who want to shoot off firecrackers are undeterred. So we found a little shelter there, and from beneath the shelter, the kids were shooting off the firecrackers. And anyway, we wrapped that up around 10:30. Went back to the house and figured we're not going to see the big display. It's going to be rained out. Guys, miraculously, at about 5 minutes before midnight, the rain stopped. And my wife said, "Let's go, let's go. We got to get up on the roof." So up we go, up to the roof of the apartment house, where we have a really good view of Rome. And at the appointed moment, the barrage began, and fireworks rose up from all over the city. And it was really, really well done. The Italians have a flair for beauty and style and design, of course, and that, I think that extends into the realm of the fireworks. Very few heavy-duty explosions. The Italians wouldn't be into that, but really beautiful, colorful displays up into the sky. So it was really nice. We had our bottle of non-alcoholic champagne, which we shared with the kids, and we rang in the new year in style up on the roof here at in Trastevere. So it was real nice. Happy New Year again to all of you. All right, listen, moving on to technical topics here. Enough of the travelogue. I hope the whistling S sound in my voice is being kind of attenuated here. We've got a couple of different projects going. One, I'm not speaking directly into the mic anymore. I'm speaking kind of across it, and I've been told that that'll help. In the last episode, in Solder Smoke 119, this is 120, by the way. I think I failed to mention that. In the last one, I ran a filter that dropped off everything above 3 kc's, but I got a couple of comments saying that that made the audio a bit muddy. So this time I'm going to be more focused in the filter, and one kind listener has sent me instructions on how to focus the filtering action a little bit better on Audacity. So I'll give that a try, and audio reports will be appreciated. Let me know how it sounds. I've been on the air from the from the Sabine Hills. The HW8 is out there, and we've been out in the country a bit more than normal. So I've been on the air with the HW8, and it's really encouraging. I think sunspots are coming back. I've got good feelings about the ionosphere, and I've started to notice that, especially in the afternoon, in the late afternoon, U.S. stations, North American stations start to become audible. Even in my little HW8 with my kind of subpar antenna, but we've been hearing U.S. stations coming in, and then not long ago I had a real thrill because for the first time in a very long time, I actually worked a U.S. station, and it was on 20 meters with the HW8, and the station I talked to was KZ1H, OM George, KZ1H was on there that day. He was the only station I worked, but it was a really, really good one. And usually what I do when I get back to Rome, I take a look and Google the stations that I talk to. And I was really pleased to see available on the web the personal radio history of George, KZ1H. And it's really interesting. George is obviously a very fine business radio amateur who's been on the air for a long time. And his own personal history stretches back and puts him in contact with some of the big names of radio in the very early days. And I put George's radio history in a picture of him as a teenage ham on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. I could tell when in the QSO with George that he was a really good fine business radio amateur, and I'll tell you why, because he really persisted in pulling my little weak signal out of the noise. Sadly, there's fewer and fewer people who are willing to do that these days, especially at, around contest time. I often get the impression that unless you're really blasting in to somebody's headphones, they have a tendency just to say, "Well, I'm not gonna bother." But George bothered, and he hung in there and pulled my signal out of the noise, and we had a very nice chat on 20 CW. So thanks very much for pulling me out of the noise, George, if you're listening, and really enjoy the contact. I've since heard George last week we were out there, and I heard George again, so it's like it was really nice to hear an old friend. My dipole antenna has fallen down, and so our next project out in the country is going to be putting the antenna up again and putting it in a better position. I've been joking on the blog that my summertime out on the front porch operating position is no longer usable because temperatures are dropping, and I'm an early morning radio operator, so it's particularly cold and dark at 5 a.m. in December and January. And my wife took mercy on me and arranged with the property owner for me to have access to a building that's a bit more comfortable. So the shack has been moved, and now I'm operating from an indoor location. It's really kind of cool. It looks out over the valley, and I can see the beautiful town of Scandria off in the distance, and it's a good place to operate and contemplate the universe and send out signals across the pond. So I hope to be putting the antenna up. Last weekend I just threw up a piece of wire because I didn't have a whole lot of time to mess around with antennas, but I just threw up a piece of wire about 40 meters long, just an end-fed wire on 40 meters long, and tuned it up with the little Pi Network Trastevere flea market antenna tuner that I've been telling you guys about. Tuned right up, and I fired the thing up and worked stations on 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, but 15 was dead. So three of the four HW bands were used, and worked a number of stations. Let me pull up my logbook here. Talked to HB9TNW on 80 meters. Talked to UI7IQ Portable on 20. I3KAN on 80, OK7FL on 40, F5POJ on 40, UA6HNU on 20 meters, and RW6AM also on 20. And was, like I said, was really pleased to hear KZ1H again on 20 meters, and he was in QSO with RA6AGR. And was, like I said, like hearing an old friend on the radio. So we've been having fun with the HW8. Really love that rig, and been having a great time with it. Let's see what else. Oh, when out there, one funny note: when the there's another family that has an apartment out there with us, friends from Trastevere. They're Canadians, and when I was still out on the front porch, I was listening, and I told the little kid who with the family, as 8-year-old Mateo, 7-year-old Mateo, I said, "I'm talking to Canada," and he's Canadian. And he looked at what I was doing, and he looked down the twin lead feed line, which was going out into the trees. And in all sincerity, he looked at me and he goes, "Does that wire go all the way to Canada?" Well, no, Mateo, it doesn't. But it was a nice question, and it provided me the opportunity to explain the miracle of radio. One thing I noticed when I hear the stations coming in from the U.S., very often there's a really strong flutter on them, and I'm guessing that this is auroral flutter. I can't recall hearing this kind of flutter before, but it's really strong, and only on the signals coming in from North America. So that's interesting. I wonder if anybody could send me comments on that, whether that's in fact auroral flutter. Anyway, good fun on with the HW8 on the HF bands. Came across something, and I put this on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page in our homebrew hero department. Dale Parfit, W4OP. I don't know where or how I came across this article by Dale. But it was on the blog of a of a Canadian radio amateur, and he did an interview a few years back with Dale, and Dale's name immediately rang a bell because I had some really, really good contact with him a few years ago. What had happened is I had one of my first successful receiver projects was designed by Doug Dumois, W1FB, and it was called the Barebone Superhead. Sometimes it's described as the Barbados receiver or the Barbados Superhead or the Barbados Bare Bones receiver, but it's basically a really simple single conversion superhead, and the design appears in a number of articles. It's in a QST article. I found mine in a QST article. Info is on it up on my personal webpage at gadgeteer.us. But I built this receiver, had big success with it, was really pleased, and then I started a process where I seemed to be accumulating bits and pieces for other versions of the receiver. There was a FAR circuits board kit out there, so sometimes when I'd be searching for information on the Barebone Superhead, I would come across guys who had built one or were selling one, and people sent me kits, and I got bits and pieces of it. And anyway, I ended up with several different versions of the Barebone Superhead around the shack. And one of the things that I bought on eBay, I think I bought it on eBay, was a completed kit that came in. And when it came in, I was really struck by how professionally it had been put together. It really looked great. I mean, whoever did this thing, I knew who did it, but the guy who sold it to me really did a great job. He put additional shielding in. All the cabling was done right. He changed the VFO around a bit so that he could get, he put in a varactor circuit, and he put in a DC to DC converter so that he could get wider swing on the varactor. It was really, really well done, very clever, and I worked on it for a while, then I put it away, and a few years later I started working on it again, and I had some questions about the modifications that had been done on the receiver. So of course I turned to the net. It might have been QRPL, it might have been the homebrew Usenet group. But anyway, I put some questions out there, and I got into a conversation with Dale, W4OP, and we went back and forth, and he was discussing it, and he was trying to get me to describe the mods and how it was working. And all of a sudden, after I guess about six or seven different email exchanges, he finally said to me, he goes, "You know, this thing sounds really familiar. Describe it to me a little bit better." And I described it, and then he came back laughing. He said, yeah, you bought that thing from me. So anyway, there was this great interview with Dale about his experiences as a radio amateur, about his company, his very successful antenna company that he's still running, about Earth Moon Earth and his other really exotic ham radio activities. So check it out. It's on the blog page at soldersmoke.blogspot.com. There you go, and that'll get you to the interview. I've been making some progress on the SDR, on the Soft Rock SDR project. I'm building it completely backwards. the part that I've completed is the power amplifier and bandpass filter board. In the Soft Rock building guide, this is billed as the most difficult part of the construction process. But for me, it was the easiest because it was closest to the old kind of discrete component construction that I'm used to. I've indicated on the blog that I'm really trying to fight against the curmudgeon tendencies that we all tend to have. This is a new style of construction, new technology, stuff that I'm not used to. So I really don't want to fall into the trap of saying, "Oh, you know, I like it the old better the old way, and I don't like all this newfangled surface mount stuff." So I'm really trying not to become a curmudgeon on this. And keeping an open mind, it does require some skill. It does require some practice. I'm slowly but surely getting there. But anyway, I'd like to report that I've got the the final amplifier and PA stage done. That just means that I have the other 90% of the construction still behind me, and I still haven't gotten the power supply rails functioning properly. I think I've blown up yet another 3-volt regulator chip. I was wise enough to buy three from Mauser, so now I have I'm ready to tackle it again. But it's slow going with surface mount here at I0N2CQR, but I am enjoying it and slowly making some progress. Speaking of technical projects, there's an interesting challenge out there. This is the 4 days in May challenge that's been issued to the QRP homebrew solder smoke community, and that is to build a workable, usable rig using less than 73 parts. And there were all kinds of discussions floating around on the internet about how you counted the parts and whether an IC counted as multiple parts and how many parts are in an SBL1 or TUF1 mixer and all that. And for a while, I feared that it might degenerate into more of a legal challenge than a technical challenge. But no, everybody's moved beyond that. I think it's quite clear what the rules are now. And one of the guys who's been most active in this is Steve Weber. And I really got a kick out of something that Steve said. He was talking about that he was just on the edge of being able to meet the 72 part challenge, 72 parts or less. And one of his emails, at first I didn't quite get what he was getting at. And he says he was stuck between best wishes and hugs and kisses in his parts count. Think about it. He was stuck between best wishes and hugs and kisses. It took me a while there. See what you mean. Good luck with that, Steve. I hope you get closer to best wishes as time goes on. Hey, A1TJ was cited recently in the QRP column of CQ Magazine. Check it out. I haven't seen it myself, but it sounds like a wonderful article, and glad that Michael got the recognition that he deserves. Amazing projects continue to come out of the underground workshop of AA1TJ, the poet laureate of QRP. They're the hero of the Hobbit Hole. And lately he's using diodes as audio amplifiers in a way that I really can't understand, but I've sort of come to accept that many of Michael's projects will be just beyond my ability to comprehend. But great stuff is being done there, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Michael on using the diodes as audio amplifiers. Hey, there's a new issue of Hot Iron out, the Journal of the Constructors Club. Let's see, this is put out by Walford Electronics, and you can get more information about it at www.walfordelectronics.co.uk. I'm looking at the winter 2009 issue. All kinds of interesting information there. Morshak frequency standards by Gerald G3MCK. Some other really neat projects, and then a focus on super regen receivers, which I thought was really interesting. An article on on aerials, No More Aerial Antics, by Andrew Atkinson, G4CWX, a frequent contributor to Solder Smoke. Thanks for that, Andrew. The Super Regen article I thought was really interesting because it's some interesting it's some technology that I really need to understand a little bit better. A great article on Life or Death, QRP Radio in World War II, by John Teague, G3GTJ. An update on a number of projects that are being produced by the guys at Walford's, and then the announcement of QRP in the country. Put July 18, 2010 into your diaries now, please. Instead of having a Somerset supper this year, Tim says he's working on a new QRP event to be held here on the farm, in the field, or in the barn, shown at the right. There's a picture there, a really beautiful-looking farm country. And I just got a kick at some of the attractions will be there that will be available at this event. The opportunity to operate the replica 1930s TX built by G3GC together with my modern Valve TRF. Construction Advice Clinic, informal home construction competition judged by a radio personality. Somerset Range kits to operate and perhaps even to buy. And I got a kick out of this one, a transformer throwing competition. A bring and buy sale. Special event station, provided by the Yeovil Amateur Radio Club, and tables for display, etc. Any West Country Radio Club who would like to attend. So looks like a big event coming up there in July. It sounds like one that shouldn't be missed. And thanks for Tim for sending along Hot Iron issue number 66. I think you guys should sign up to receive Hot Iron, a really great magazine. Let's see what else we have here. Oh man, a Chinese hamsat is in orbit and transmitting. It's originally known as XW1, and now it's got an HO. I think it's HO68. I got to look at my own blog, but it's up there, and it's in a relatively high orbit. It's not geostationary, but it's up at about 1,200 kilometers, something like that, and which gives it a fairly big footprint, which I think makes possible transatlantic QSOs for those who are in the northeastern part of the U.S. And a lot of people have been sending in reports. Mark K6HX, our friend from the Brainwagon blog, has been really good about recording his sessions with the Chinese satellite and making them available on his blog page. And I think I've put up a link to those recordings on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page, so check it out. It's an interesting satellite. It's transmitting its telemetry in CW. And it's a microsat, but it's got a number of transponders working, including, at times, an FM transponder and an SSB transponder. And Mark put up some of the recordings of the SSB QSOs that are taking place on via this satellite, and they're very interesting, and it looks like a lot of fun. So those of you who have UHF receive capabilities probably can pick this thing up very easily, and there are a number of sites out there, including Heavens Above, the Heavens Above website, that can let you know when the new Chinese hamsat will be over your QDH. Very interesting stuff, and it's kind of fun that the telemetry is being transmitted in CW. And I think there's a telemetry decoder program available. I saw on one site some guys were using it to send SSTV signals. SSTV signals have been transmitted through the satellite in Europe, and on that same site, which is I think mentioned on Mark's blog, if you go scroll down a little bit further down, you could see the raw telemetry coming in, decoded from CW, and then they've obviously run it through a telemetry decoding program, and it gives you all kinds of information about the temperature of the spacecraft, the state of charge of the batteries, a lot of interesting information, information that would somehow be of interest to guys like us. I'm sure you guys know what I mean. So check it out. Hey, you know, one of the things I'm going to do in the new year is I'm going to get the kids in here to play violin for you guys. And there's a technical aspect of this. Not only am I a proud father of two violin players, but recently an article caught my attention in The Economist on violin making and violins. And do you know that one of the special characteristics of the violin is that that its frequency range is similar to that of the human voice, which might explain its special properties or special appeal. There's a center for violin making going back to the earliest days of the instruments in the 16th century. It's up north near Milan, called Cremona, and we had intended to go to Cremona in November during our swing through northern Italy, but we didn't make it there. So Cremona's on the list of the places that we have to see. But all kinds of interesting information here about the old violins. And one of the things that I found interesting was the story of Stradivari. You know, you've all heard of the Stradivarius, the famous Stradivarius volcanoes, violins. He produced an enormous number of violins because he was working diligently on these things. He produced, I think, well over 1,000. I got to find the numbers here, but and one of the reasons he produced so many of them was that he worked right up until the very end there. This guy was punching out violins until the age of 93. So three cheers for Stradivari, and I'm going to put some more information about him up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Somehow, he's not quite an electronic homebrew hero, but there's a craft element of this, and it generates frequencies, and I don't know, somehow it seems sort of linked to what we're doing. And anyway, I like violin, so I'm going to put up something about Stradivari there. And I think also this is inspirational too for another reason, because like others that we've been talking about here, Stradivari apparently got a late start in the violin game, and did his best work when he was in his 80s and 90s. So we all could take inspiration from that. let's see, and I'll put something up about Stradivari. Technical woes. We've been having some technical trouble here, guys. And again, I have to fight the kind of curmudgeon tendencies here, but I was struggling with Linux, the new operating system, because, you know, Billy's got the Linux version of the Asus EPC. And man, I'm telling you, it's things that would be relatively easy to do in Windows. Well, they're not easy to do in Linux, at least not for me. And I know this is going to really kind of upset some of the real Linux heads out there, but man, I tell you, I struggle with this thing, and I found myself yearning for Microsoft. I know there's a lot of potential here, and I'm running Linux on an old Tekra computer here, but in terms of getting it to use or run a piece of software that's kind of new, I had a lot of trouble with it. So I've had Linux woes here. I'm back on Whisper. I'm running Whisper right now by K1JT. I got the Whisper program running on the Tekra 8100 old PC, and it's putting out a lot of power. Well, 20 milliwatts. But it's being picked up by a lot of stations around Europe, so I've been having fun with that. Other technical woes, this Billy's Radio Control Model Airplane. It's by an outfit called Hobby Zone, and it's one of these styrofoam radio control model airplanes that allow you to fly and crash without destroying a model that took you 6 months to build. That's when I was a kid building model airplanes. You'd build the model, you'd spend 6 months, excuse me, 6 months building it, then you'd instantly crash the thing, and well, it was just too heartbreaking for words. But anyway, Billy's got this radio control model plane by Hobby Zone. It's called the Firebird Freedom, and it was billed as a really simple, easy model for newcomers to radio control flight, as we are. But it didn't work out that way. It was very difficult to fly, and I should have done this before I bought it, but I checked it out on the web, and there were a lot of complaints about this. The company has some other models that are apparently more successful for newcomers, so we're going to take a look at those. But right now, we got a couple of good flights out of it, but we didn't really seem to be in too much control, and the thing had a nasty tendency to nosedive into the ground, which causes a lot of damage. But anyway, we're just starting our adventure with radio-controlled model airplanes, and I'll keep you posted. I want to say, though, that we had a fun experience with it, because when we originally had to charge up the nickel metal hydride batteries in it, the charger is designed to be used out of the cigarette lighter plug of a car, and I wanted to charge it up here in the shack, and Billy said, oh man, we got to go down to the car, and I said, no, we've got a power supply right here that we can use. And I turned to the power supply that I picked up at the Kempton Park Rally many years ago, that was built around IC chips and a circuit design provided by Tony Fishpool. The box of the power supply was painted by young Maria Patricia, and we used that to charge up the nickel metal hydride batteries in Billy's brand new radio controlled model airplane. Gentlemen, what we're talking about here is soul in the old machine. It was great fun to use that power supply, and it brought back memories of Kempton Park and Tony Fishpool and Maria painting the box, and great fun. Soul in the new machine. Let's see. What else we have here? On the QRSS front, Johan, ON5EX, who's got one of the big grabbers out there, put out a suggestion not long ago that we should move to the next phase in QRSS and start, instead of just transmitting patterns, come up with some device or some circuitry to put some form of telemetry information in the QRSS signal. I found this was really interesting, and I sent a message back joking with Johan saying that I'm way ahead of him, because in the summertime when my QRSS signal is on the air, if the air conditioner kicks in the house, I can notice it from afar, because I'll notice there'll be a noticeable frequency shift, a few hertz up or a few hertz down on my transmitter, depending on the temperature in the shack. And I can also tell, of course, from afar, if there's been if the circuit breaker in the house has been tripped, because the signal suddenly disappears, and I know that somebody back at the house has knocked out the power and the thing is taken off the air. So those are two bits of telemetry that I already have incorporated into my very advanced QRSS MEPT circuitry here, Johan. But I'm with you, and I think that would be a really good idea to work some telemetry into the QRSS signals. In related development, Whisper, we talked about Whisper by K1JT before. I am transmitting now. Let me take a look at over here and see if anybody's picked me up this morning. As we speak, I'm going to the Spot database on the other computer. Aha, yes, here we have it. My signals now, this morning, just minutes ago, have been picked up by G3YSX up there in the UK, and he has spotted me four times this morning, and the strongest signal that I have at his location, at my strongest, I'm 22 dBs below the noise, 22 dB below the noise, and he's picked me up as weak as 26 dB below the noise. Signal-to-noise ratios, negative 22, negative 25, negative 26, negative 24 at G3YSX. My 20 milliwatts is covering a path of 1,414 kilometers. Up, another station has picked me up just this second. It's now 0732 UTC, and at 0730, my signal was picked up by Fox 6 Bravo India Alpha at 24 dB below the noise. It's really neat. I like the Spot database here. I watch it, and it gives you kind of almost real-time indication of who's picking you up. So you could find this all just by going to whispernet.org. That's WSPRnet, all one word, .org. Or just search for K1JT or Whisper, and you'll see the database there. But it's fun to watch these kind of reports rolling in, especially when you're pumping out a 20-watt signal to just an NFED piece of wire. Anyway, WhisperNet is really, Whisper activity is really booming, and I noted, I think in the last Solder Smoke, that a milestone had been achieved where there were more than 100,000 spots, I think, on November 21st. Now I'm looking at the page, and it's routinely over 150,000 spots per day. So congratulations to Joe, K1JT. And again, thanks to him for bringing this really amazing software and technology to the amateur community. I think it's really important for the QRP community in particular. Let's go now. It's time for
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
Indeed. Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. I apologize if some of the mail didn't make it into the list here. I got to go back and dig up some messages. So if I missed you here, I'll try to get you in the next edition. But Preston, WJ2V, writes from deep in the heart of New York City, and he straightened me out on the Soft Rock name. I had been saying that I was building a Soft Rock 40, but that's the name of the Yahoo group, and I'm building a different model here. It shows you how in touch I am with with the new technology. I don't even have the name right. But thanks for straightening me out there, Preston. And I had also been kind of hoping that to use one of my really old Pentium 3 computers here, and Preston warned me that that's just probably not going to happen. I need something a little bit more advanced in the audio processing and sound card department, but maybe Billy's Asus EPC. I hear some guys using Asus EPCs there, so maybe we'll see some progress in that area. Our friend Jim, AL7RV, writes in that hams from India have recently gained access to 30 meters. Big news. That's great. Congratulations to the hams there in Victor Uniform Land, and welcome to 30 meters. This opens up the possibility, of course, of QRSS and whisper stations from India, and great. I think that's really good news. Jim, AB3CV, writes in about a very simple phasing type SSB generator that appeared recently in an online edition of Electronic Design Notes, or EDN, and I have a link to this up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Check it out. Fred Cousins, a listener, writes in about the 1930s ham radio video that we all saw a while back. It was really good. Thanks for reminding us of that, Fred. Good stuff. Pete, a VE2XPL, has been reading Solder Smoke the book up there in Montreal, and he recently bought a Drake 2B on the South Cars Swap Net. I used to listen to that when I was back in the States. Great stuff. Glad we have another proud Drake 2B owner out there. By the way, Jim, AL7RV, has been monitoring Drake 2B prices, and he claims that I have been driving these prices up. And that as a result of Solder Smoke's frequent mention of the venerable Drake 2B, the prices of Drake 2Bs on eBay and in other fora have been rising dramatically. All I can say, guys, is that I mentioned this a while back, that I recently, you know, before all the financial problems, I'm happy to report that I took all my retirement money and took it out of the stock market and put it in all my investments now are in Drake 2Bs and solid state design for the radio amateur, and I must say I'm outperforming the market. So Dave WI2Q asks if I can hear AM broadcast tiers from the States. I haven't tried, but I'm sure you can. Sometimes we'll fire up the AM broadcast band at night and you hear all kinds of distant stations coming in, but I haven't heard any from the States. But I'm sure some of those big clear channel 50 kW stations, WOR AM New York, that 50 kilowatt station that with the clear channel smile or whatever they used to say, I'm sure it can reach all the way over here. Got a good email I mentioned earlier, Mark, K6HX, and his wonderful Brainwagon blog. He writes that he agreed with with one of my movie reviews. He agreed with my review on Julie and Julia, about Julia Child, and Mark pointed out that that Julia Child is an inspiration for us. This is similar to what I said about Stradivari, because he points out that he agreed with my assessment that there were kind of technical craft aspects of it that should appeal to NAC victims, but he also points out that Julia, a child, should be inspirational because she didn't get her start in cooking until her mid-40s. So there's hope indeed out there for those of us who were late starters in our chosen craft area of radio electronics. Great. Let's see what else we have here. JWA6MOK. He has recently read Solder Smoke, the book, Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics, and liked it very much. He talked a little bit about his ham radio history and said that he got his ham radio license on the first day, on the same day that he got his marriage license, but he notes kind of in a wry way that he used the marriage license first. So good thing, Jay. I'm glad you got your priorities in order there, old man. Thanks for the email. Dick, WA2JYZ, also liked the book, and he also sent information about his ham radio history, and he was involved in the hobby on and off for many years, but never really had the time to focus on it. But now that he's retired, he's really into it. Like I said, he enjoyed the book. And he points out that there's another ham radio-related book available on Lulu, and that's the Carl and Jerry books. There's a Carl and Jerry collection available on Lulu.com. Maybe you guys want to think about doing a package buy and buying the Solder Smoke book and Carl and Jerry. It would be a nice package. Finally, we have an email from Dave, WA5DJJ. Dave has been one of the most enthusiastic newcomers to QRSS. And sad to report that he had an accident and broke his arm, but he's recovering, and apparently this has affected his CW transmitting abilities, as you'd expect. But obviously QRSS would be a good mode because he can keep on transmitting even though he's not using the straight key. Dave, we hope your arm heals up real fast and continued good luck with QRSS in 2010. Guys, I'm looking at my screen. Let's see. I've been picked up. My signal is picking up at G3 YSX. I'm now only 18 dB below the noise. And let's see. I've been picked up now. Since we spoke last, my signals have been received three times by DL6, four times by DL6 XAZ. XAZ. I'm at his location. I'm 26 dB below the noise, 19 dB below the noise, 23 below the noise, and 21 dB below the noise. So great stuff. The signal is reaching into Northern Europe and the United Kingdom and having great fun with QRSS. All right, guys, that concludes the first Solder Smoke broadcast of the new year. Again, Happy New Year to all. Good luck in 2010. Thanks for listening, and keep those cards, letters, and emails coming in. Take a look at the Solder Smoke, the book. It's really getting good reviews. Guys really seem to like it. If you haven't picked it up yet, go to lulu.com. You can find the link on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com webpage up in the upper right. Thanks a lot. 73, Happy New Year from Rome.